The National Archives podcast series, Poetry and Prose by Women in the First World War, presented by Ruth Sillars. This talk was recorded on the 10th of March 2015 at the National Archives, Kew.
The War Girls Project developed after a visit I made to a place called Craiglockett about 4 years ago. My family is Scottish and I have family in Edinburgh, and they live just around the corner from what is now part of Edinburgh Napier University, but was originally the Craiglockett Hydropathic. It was set up in 1880, and it was requisitioned during the First World War for the treatment of shell-shocked officers. It was here in 1917 that Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon met, and then wrote some of the most extraordinary poetry of the First World War. And I'm sure that many of you may know this story from a wonderful book by a lady called Pat Barker called Regeneration. So as a result of its amazing history, they actually set up a war poets collection, which you could go and visit. I didn't know about this, but a relative told me about it. So I went to visit the archive about 4 years ago now. And I talked to the curator there. And during the course of our conversation, she mentioned this anthology she thought I might be interested in called Scars Upon My Heart, which is an anthology, some of you may know, of women's poetry from the First World War. I didn't know it, so I left the archive. I went straight to the biggest bookshop I could find in Edinburgh. I bought a copy, I read it, and on reading it, I became completely haunted by the collection. Why, I wondered, did I not know so many of these wonderful women writers? And why had the story of the First World War that I knew only been told by men? So I decided I would like to tell that story through the lives and experiences of women. And I approached an independent production company called Crimson Cats, who are actually ex-BBC producers themselves. And we went on a long journey together, during which time my intrepid producers fought many a battle to gain copyright permission, and I went off in search of prose to go with the poetry. And out of all of that came the War Girls collection. Some of the pieces that you will hear are writings of established poets and novelists, but many more are records of ordinary women living through extraordinary times. They detail not only personal hardship and suffering, but also the joy and excitement as new challenges and opportunities became available to people in a new society emerging. A century on, their experiences are as compelling, powerful, and relevant as they were at the time. You may not know, but there was actually a huge campaign by women to try and stop the war happening at all. And women delegates from all over the world attended a peace rally in The Hague. This is from the Manchester Guardian, 1st of August, 1914. International Manifesto of Woman. We, the women of the world, view with apprehension and dismay the present situation in Europe, which threatens to involve one continent, if not the whole world, in the disasters and horrors of war. In this terrible hour, when the fate of Europe depends on decisions which women have no power to shape, we, realizing our responsibilities as the mothers of the race, cannot stand passive by. Powerless though we are politically, we call upon the governments and powers of our several countries to avert the threatened unparalleled disaster. We women of 26 countries, having bonded ourselves together in the International Women's Suffrage Alliance, with the object of obtaining the political means of sharing with men the power which shapes the fate of nations, appeal to you to leave untried no method of conciliation or arbitration for arranging international differences to avert deluging half the civilized world in blood. Signed, on behalf of the International Woman Suffrage Alliance, Millicent Garrett Fawcett, First Vice President, Crystal McMillan, Recording Secretary. Well, as we know, sadly, their pleas were ignored. And so the following pieces come from the section we called First Casualties. This is Joining the Colours, West Kent's Dublin, August 1914, by Catherine Tynan. There they go, marching all in steps so gay, smooth-cheeked and golden, food for shells and guns. Blithely, they go as to a wedding day, the mother's sons. The drab street stares to see them row on the high tram tops, singing like the lark, too careless gay for courage, singing they go into the dark. With tin whistles, mouth organs, any noise, they pipe the way to glory and the grave. Foolish and young, the gay and golden boys love cannot save. High heart, high courage, the poor girls they kissed run with them. They shall kiss no more, alas. Out of the mist they stepped, into the mist, singing they passed. Women's lives were transformed as they were called upon to participate in the war effort. Our anthology's title actually comes from a poem by Jessie Pope called War Girls. This is War Girls by Jessie Pope. There's the girl who clips your ticket for the train, and the girl who speeds the lift from floor to floor. There's the girl who does a milk round in the rain, and the girl who calls for orders at your door. Strong, sensible and fit, they're out to show their grit and tackle jobs with energy and knack. No longer caged and penned up, they're going to keep their end up till the khaki soldier boys come marching back. There's the motor girl who drives a heavy van. There's the butcher girl who brings your joint of meat. There's the girl who cries, "All fares, please," like a man. And the girl who whistles taxis at the street. Beneath each uniform beats a heart that's soft and warm, though of canny mother wit they show no lack. But a solemn statement this is, they've no time for love and kisses till the khaki soldier boys come marching back. One of the main impacts of war on the home front was, of course, the Zeppelin raids and the devastation that they brought. This is A Zeppelin Shot Down by Muriel Daryl Browning. 4th of September, 1916. Dearest mums, I will now tell you about the raid last night, the sight of my life. It was the second night of London lighting, or rather, no lighting orders. At 2:30, I was awakened by a terrific explosion and was at the window in one bound when another deafening one shook the house. Nearly above us sailed a cigar of bright silver in the full glare of about 20 magnificent searchlights. A few lights roamed round, trying to pick up her companion. Our guns made a deafening row and shells burst all round her. For some extraordinary reason, she was dropping no bombs. The night was absolutely still, with a few splendid stars. It was a magnificent sight, and the whole of London was looking on, holding its breath. She was only a little way to the east of me, and I had a topping view as there's a stone balcony outside the window. The Zepp headed slowly north amid a rain of shells and crashing artillery fire from all quarters. She was pretty high up, but enormous, 600 feet long, I should say. Captain Itch came up and joined me, and we watched for another 5 minutes, when suddenly her nose dropped, and I yelled, "Geschossen!" But she righted again and went into a cloud. Then the searchlights scientifically examined that cloud to help the airmen, but she didn't appear, and we thought the fun was over, as the gun stopped. There, from the direction of Barnet, and very high, a brilliant red light appeared, and we saw it was the Zepp diving head first. It was quite a sight. She dived slowly at first, as only the foremost ballonet was on fire. Then the second burst, and the flames tore up into the sky, and the glare lit up all London and thundered with cheers all round us from every direction. The sky was rose red. Those deaths must be some of the most dramatic in the world's history. They fell, a cone of blazing wreckage, thousands of feet, watched by millions of their enemies. It was magnificent, the most thrilling scene imaginable. When peace finally came. It was greeted, of course, with mixed emotions. Relief that the war was finally over, but then coming to terms with loss and having to readjust to life in the aftermath of war. And this is Virginia Woolf, famous resident of Richmond, of course. This is Diary 1918, London. Peace is rapidly dissolving into the light of the common day. You can go to London without meeting more than two drunk soldiers. Only an occasional crowd blocks the street. But mentally, the change is marked too. Instead of feeling that the whole people, willing or not, were concentrated on a single point, one feels now that the whole bunch has burst asunder and flown off with the utmost vigour in different directions. We are once more a nation of individuals. Some people care for football, others for racing, others for dancing, others for, oh well, they're all running about very gaily, getting out of their uniforms and taking up their private affairs again. The streets are crowded with people quite at their ease, and the shops blazoning with unshaded lights. Yet it's depressing, too. We have stretched our minds to consider something universal at any rate. We contract them at once to the squabbles of Prime Minister Lloyd George and a general election. The papers are unreadable. I hope these readings have given you a flavour of the War Girls anthology. This is only a tiny selection of the whole collection, and I hope they've also given you an idea of the range of women's lives and experiences during the First World War. The collection finishes with an epitaph by, I think, one of the most extraordinary and unsung poets of our collection, a wonderful poet called Sarah Teasdale. And I thought I would let her have the last word. This is There Will Come Soft Rains by Sarah Teasdale. There will come soft rains and the smell of the ground, and swallows calling with their shimmering sound, and frogs in the pools singing at night, and wild plum trees in tremulous white. Robins will wear their feathery fire, whistling their whims on a low fence wire. And not one will know of the war, not one will care at last when it is done. Not one would mind, neither bird nor tree, if mankind perished utterly, and spring herself, when she woke at dawn, would scarcely know that we were gone.
This podcast is copyright to the National Archives, rights reserved. It is available for reuse under the terms of the Open Government License.